Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is Top 10 Problems on WebSphere MQ Distributed. Today's presenters are Gregory Bowman and Jack White. Greg began in IBM customer support in 1987. In 1996, he began supporting MQ Series, which is now known as WebSphere MQ. In the past, he has supported MQ on C-Series as well as the distributed platforms, but now concentrates on the distributed platforms. Jack White started with IBM in 1997, providing support for the Visual Age Tech-Based Application Development Tool. In 2000, he joined the WebSphere MQ team supporting customers on the distributed platforms. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Greg and Jack.
Thank you, Joseph. My name is Greg Bowman, and my colleague Jack White and I are going to cover our top 10 today. So if we want to go ahead to page 2, we'll go through the agenda real quick. It's very simple. I'm just going to have a brief introduction to talk about how we selected our top 10 and what top 10 actually means in regards to this presentation. We'll go through those items and then we'll have a brief summary. So it's a very simple agenda for today. If you'll turn to page 3, what we're going to cover is in our introduction is what makes up our top 10. Basically, there are problems that we've seen reported multiple times, so things that we think are big hitters. There are problems that we have seen that we think may affect other people if you don't take the steps that we have identified in our items here to resolve the problems. Are there just problems that we looked at and thought sounded like they would be interesting topics to cover in presentations such as this? So we didn't really have any scientific method for pulling these items together. They're more or less our top 10, not anything based on numbers of these are the most reported problems or anything like that, just items that we pulled together. So if you go to page 4, the way we're going to present these today is basically we don't have time to get into great detail on every topic here. So a lot of the items that we're going to present, we're just going to give some high-level details. Then we'll have more information or links there where you can get more information on each one of the items that we cover. These items are not in any particular order, so 1 through 10 are just ways of numbering them, but don't mean anything in regard to this being the most reported problem or least reported problem in our top 10, nothing like that. Several of the topics that we're going to cover today are not just one specific problem. Some are. Others are more in line of a general topic area, and when we cover those, it'll probably make more sense. But some items are one specific problem. Others are general areas of a problem. And then all of these items are based on things that we've taken from items in our WebSphere MQ support site. And there's a link to it right there on that page. It'll take you to the support site. There's a lot of good information there. These are just some examples, but anytime you have a problem, that's the place you should start looking for any kind of known problems that we've already experienced before. So if we'll go to page 5, we'll go ahead and jump right into our top 10. Item number 1, titled AMQ 9507 when trying to delete a channel. The setup here is basically you have a channel and you want to delete that channel, but when you try, you get this error message, AMQ 9507, saying that the channel's in doubt. Now, normally when you get that, the obvious things to try would be to resolve the channel, to either back out the message to the transmit queue, or if you know that the messages have already been processed, or if you don't care about any messages that are associated with that channel, you could use the commit option. But obviously the first thing you would try is to resolve the channel. Now, in this case, they tried at it, and it did not work. The next thing they tried was the information about the channel sequence numbers and whether it's in doubt or not primarily that information is stored in the system.channel.sync queue. So there are some other tech notes out here that talk about similar problems, and you can resolve it by just removing that entry for that one channel from our system.channel.sync queue. In this case, they had tried that, and that didn't work either. Investigating the problem, what we found in that particular case was that the reason that they had the problem to begin with was they had a transmission queue that still had some messages on it associated with that channel, and they had deleted that transmission queue prior to the point when they were trying to delete the channel. Now, I suspect probably in that case also, although we didn't have a way to definitely show that, that the messages that were on that queue were probably in doubt, the channel was probably in doubt when the transmit queue was deleted. Now, I will say that that's not the only condition that I've seen this problem occur for. For example, one other case, a customer had multiple channels pointing to a single transmit queue, and they would switch back and forth between channels based on their particular needs at a certain time, and somewhere along the way they got into a case where they had caused the problem to occur with some of the actions they took in regards to switching back and forth. But that's just to say that that is not the only case where you might potentially hit this problem, and the resolution that we're going to cover here in just a moment would work for other conditions. This is just the ones that were associated with this particular instance of the problem. So if we go over to page 6, we have the resolution. Now, there's several steps here to this resolution. Basically, what it's going to involve is removing all information about your channels and redefining all of your channels. It seems a bit drastic, but that's the steps we had to take in this particular instance. And like I had mentioned earlier, those other steps that the customer had tried originally will actually take care of that AMQ 9507 most of the time. But if you get into a predicament where it didn't, these are the steps that you could take to get around the problem. Now, first step is to make a backup of all your channel definitions. A lot of our customers are already doing this. They use either Support Pack MS03, which is out there available, allows you to make a backup of all your queue manager definitions, not just your channels. A lot of customers are already doing this. We recommend that you do this if for no other reason than to have it as a disaster recovery. We would recommend that you do this in general anyway. But if you're not already doing it, you could get Support Pack MS03 and use it to make a copy of your existing channel definitions. Step 2 is where we actually delete all the information associated with your channels. And that information is stored in different places on different versions of MQ, and I listed out the different versions and the actual files that are associated with each version. You would need to delete these files in order to delete the information that's represented in those channels. I always like to make a backup copy of things before I start deleting it, if for no other reason than to have it for root cause analysis if it comes up later. But we're not going to go back and reuse those files typically, but I still like to make it a habit to make a backup copy of them. So step 2, delete those files. Then if you go to page 7, step 3 is going to be to clear the system.channel.sync queue. Now, I had mentioned in earlier steps here that the customer had tried removing just the one entry for that particular channel from the sync queue. In this case, we're clearing all the messages from the sync queue because we're going to redefine all the channels. And that's step 4. After you cleared off the sync queue, and deleted all those files, you've effectively removed all knowledge of channels from the queue manager. So now if you redefine the channels, it should allow you to reuse that channel. Can't guarantee that this will work 100% of the time. I can say that I've used it several times with customers, and it has been successful each time I've tried it. But if it does not work, then you're in a predicament where you're going to have to recreate your entire queue manager to get out of that situation if you want to continue using that particular channel name. Your alternative would be just not to use that channel name, to find a new channel by a different name and use it instead. So that completes topic or item number one. We'll turn to page 8. Item 2 is one that I mentioned that some of our topics were going to be more of a general item rather than one specific thing. This is one of those cases. Topic 2, cluster users can see various problems if they're not up to date on MQ maintenance. This has been the case throughout the history of clustering in MQ. It's important to stay up to date in maintenance on MQ if you're using clustering. What I did in this particular item, just to try to illustrate that point, was listed out several of the APARs that are related to clustering in the most recent fix packs. Now, this in no way is a list of all cluster problems. I just picked some of the ones that were in the most recent fix pack just to illustrate the point that it's important to keep up to date with maintenance, especially if you're using clustering. I listed out some of the items here. I'm not going to get into every single one of them and go into details on those. We really don't have time. We have links to each of the APARs here if you see something that's of particular interest to your specific environment. You can click on that link and go to that particular APAR. But just for example, like the first one I listed there, IZ59905, MQ version 6, 32-bit cluster queue manager migrated to version 7, 64-bit cluster queue manager failed to start. Pretty drastic. I think you would know if you had that problem. I listed out the fix pack that includes the fix for that problem there at the end, 7012. You'll notice in some of the others that are applicable to both version 6 and version 7, I list both the version 6 fix pack and the version 7 fix pack. Most of the items I listed here by themselves are not complete showstoppers. They're more annoyance than showstopper type problems, I would say. But they start adding up after a point, and you know, some of them are showstoppers, particularly that first one if you're doing a migration to version 7. There are other problems in previous maintenance levels, so the farther back you are in maintenance, the more likely you are to encounter some of these problems. And once you, the thing of it is, once you get into those problems, it can be very difficult to recover. It can be a long and arduous process to investigate the problems. And if you go to page 9, basically, the resolution, as I said, is simply to keep your maintenance current. The most recent levels at the time that we put this together for version 6 is fix pack 6029, and for version 7, 7012. Just keep in mind that the further back in maintenance you are, the more likely you are to hit some of these big problems, and they can be a headache to try to recover from. Go to page 10. And we'll talk about topic number 3, MQ JMS 2013 invalid security authentication supplied for a WMQ queue manager. This particular problem involves a setup with WebSphere application server. And in this particular scenario, there's a servlet being running in WAS, and it calls a JMS factory connection to create a queue connection into an MQ queue manager to an MQ queue. Now, this is a very common scenario, and in this case, they had it working just fine for quite some time. They applied WebSphere app server maintenance, and I listed out the particular levels they moved from, and we'll get into the details a little bit later why that specific levels are important here. But in this case, they went from 61027 of WebSphere app server to 61029. After they did that, this scenario that had been working fine for them, they started getting a JMS security exception, MQ JMS 2013 invalid security authentication supplied for the create QM. And basically what that message, MQ JMS 2013 error, is telling you is that the user ID that's being passed from WAS into MQ cannot be authenticated. So either that it's not a known user ID, or it's not a user ID that has the authority to do the connection to the queue manager or to access the queue. Now, you may think, well, how could upgrading the WebSphere app server maintenance cause my ID to become non-authorized? And if we go to page 11, we have to talk about the way that WebSphere app server user ID gets passed into MQ in order to understand how that change could have affected the authentication in MQ. So in WebSphere app server, the JMS connection factory has something called a container managed authentication alias, or it can have something called a component managed authentication alias. And those are the properties where the user ID would come from if you wanted to define an ID to be passed into MQ. Now, there's a property in WebSphere App Server called ResAuth, and if you set the ResAuth property to be container, then the user ID is going to come from a container managed authentication alias in your JMS connection factory. Now, the ResAuth default value is application. So if you didn't specify anything for ResAuth and just let it defaults to application. In that case, the user ID is going to come from a component managed authentication alias. A common scenario that some people will use is they don't want to bother with the user ID being passed. So if they just let the ResAuth default to application and they do not define a component managed authentication alias, then in their JMS connection factory, then what happens is no user ID gets passed on that call from WAS into MQ, or basically a null user ID is actually what gets passed. So this is the way it did work before the upgrade to the WebSphere app server maintenance. So if we turn to page 12, The reason that things changed was actually a change in an MQA par. Now, within WebSphere App Server, there's an MQ client basically embedded into the WebSphere, into the App Server. When that maintenance was upgraded on the App Server, what happens was the MQ client also was updated. Now, in MQ6025, there was an APAR, and I list it here, IZ17062. There's a link to it if you want to see more details about it. But basically, there was a change in that APAR that said if there is a null, if the app server doesn't specify any user ID to be passed into MQ for authentication, instead of passing a null user ID, we want you to use that user ID that starts WebSphere app server. Pass that user ID into MQ to be authenticated instead of just using a null user ID. Now, at some point it was decided that that wasn't the actual intent of the change in IZ17062. So another MQ APAR, IZ49302, reversed that change to make it look basically the way it did before, where if you didn't have any user ID specified, that a null would be passed into MQ. So that change happened in MQ6028. And the way it lines up is in WebSphere App Server 61027, which is the level that this customer was at before they upgraded, the MQ client jar files were still at the 6024 level, which was prior to any of this change happening. After they upgraded, they went to 61029, which was in the middle of the change, so that they had the fix from the 6025 level, the IZ17062, which caused the user ID to be passed from the app server. So if we go to page 13, we can talk about the way to get around the problem. the first thing you could do, number one, is to resolve the problem is when you define your ResAuth, if you point it to the component managed authentication alias and define a user ID within a component managed authentication alias. In other words, set your JMS connection factory up to point to a component managed authentication alias, have a user ID that you know that you have set up an MQ to be authorized, and use that. In other words, have a controlled environment where you know the user ID that's being passed, then you can avoid the problem. The second way is you can set the value of the ResAuth property to container and use a container managed authentication alias the same way as component. Use the same ID if you wanted to, and control the user ID that's being passed into MQ to be authenticated. The third way is if you didn't want to make changes to your definitions in WebSphere App Server, you could use a different version of the MQ client than the one that's supplied with the WebSphere App Server. As long as you were using a version of the MQ client that was prior to the change, which was 6024 or earlier, which I really wouldn't recommend that you go backwards in maintenance, or if you're using a version of the MQ client at 6028 or higher, then you would avoid the problem because we're in that scenario where it would pass a null user ID if you didn't want to specify one. Now, the one catch with that is if you install a separate MQ client on the same machine where you have your WebSphere App Server and you want to use that instead of the MQ client that's embedded with the WebSphere App Server, you need to change this environment variable MQ install root in your WAS configuration. If you don't do that, WAS will still try to use the client that shipped with it. You need to change that environment variable to point to the version of MQ client that you install in a separate location if you want it to use that. There's a TechNote link here at the bottom that has all these details and more. So if you want to take a look at that in more detail, you can link to that TechNote and it'll give you all the details that we just covered here and then some. Let's move on to page 14. And our fourth topic is titled Intermittent Poor Performance When an MDB Gets Messages from MQ Queues. This is one we've seen quite a number of times, and there's different reasons for this, but the one that we chose to cover here is one I've seen several times, but it involves, again, a WebSphere App Server environment, and it involves using queues with messages of different priorities. Rather than just getting messages in the order that they're put on the queue, first in, first out, you use priority sequencing so that if you have a message of a higher priority that you want to go to the top of the queue, and you can put, you know, most of your messages, say, at priority 1, and then have a priority 5 message that goes to the top of your queue, and it would be the next one that would be gotten rather than wait until it bubbled up to the top of the queue. So if you're in this scenario, they were running along the normal performance, whatever, you know, it could vary from system to system, but they were seeing normal performance for their system, quick response time, getting the messages back to their MDB, and then suddenly they see it start taking a long time to get messages, particularly messages that are put with a higher priority. And the reason that this happens is because when an MDB is getting messages from a queue, the way it does this is it uses a browse technique. It browses the queue and then has a pointer as it works its way down the queue, browsing the next message in the queue to determine whether it's the applicable message for the MDB, and if it is, it feeds it back to the MDB. But it uses that browse pointer to work its way down the queue. With priority messages going to the top of the queue, the browse pointer would have to go all the way down to the bottom of the queue, wait a length of time, which by default, the time it would typically wait at the end of the queue would be 5 seconds before it would actually go back, browse, do a browse first to get to the top of the queue and start browsing the messages again. So you could see, you know, in excess of 5-second delays where you may be getting messages back in just a few milliseconds typically. And it would, you know, it could become quite noticeable if you, you know, as it happens more frequently. So if we go to page 15, we can talk about the ways to avoid some of these delays in this particular situation. Now, the first option I listed here would typically involve a redesign of your architecture. So it may very well be that this option is not a valid choice. We listed it here because it would help alleviate the delays, because the option here is to use FIFO delivery rather than priority delivery on your queue. And you would do that by changing this parameter message delivery sequence queue to be first in, first out. And in that way, instead of having messages come in priority, we'd just take the next message in the queue, in rather than having to go all the way down the queue, come back to the top of the queue to get that priority message. You'd just take whatever the next message in line is. Now, like I said, that may not suit your particular application design, so option one may not be a viable one. Similarly, but not quite to the same extent, option two may require you to change some architecture designs. It's use of a WebSphere application server setting called non-ASF mode. Now, I greatly oversimplified it here because we really don't have nearly enough time to get into what ASF and non-ASF mode are. The topic that I listed there, the DeveloperWorks article, when to use ASF and non-ASF modes to process messages in WebSphere application server, goes into a great deal of detail on what ASF and non-ASF mode are. It gives an excellent description. It even has diagrams there to help you understand the difference between the two methods. But the reason I oversimplified it here to say it simply issues MQ-GET calls is basically with the ASF mode, which is the default, there's some extra overhead involved with getting those messages when the MDP is deciding what message to get. With non-ASF mode, the drawback, we still do an MQ-GET of the message, but the drawback is it uses a lot more resources because there's a lot, potentially can use a lot more resources because you could have a lot more threads and processes involved in the MDB getting the messages. And so it may not be suitable to your particular environment to use all these extra resources. So in that case, it may not be a viable option for you to use non-ASF. If you have lots of resources, it's probably a good choice because it'll actually speed up the response time on getting those messages back to the MDB. But if you want to know more about that, just link to that DeveloperWorks article. It's an excellent article there. The third option is the one that really probably buys you the most without costing you so much, and that's to use a property in the application server called EOQ timeout. It's the end of queue timeout. And I talked about a little earlier about when we browse down through those messages, we have to get to the end of the queue and wait 5 seconds before we go back to the top of the queue and start doing the browse again. That EOQ timeout is how long we wait at the end of the queue before we start the browse first again. So by adjusting that EOQ timeout length to a smaller value, you can cut out a lot of that wait time. The article that I linked to here goes into more detail about that EOQ timeout and specifics on how to set it. So if you're not familiar with that parameter, that item that I linked to right there, that tech note, will give you a lot more detail. There's also some other tech notes out there, but that primarily will get you what you need to know about what it is and how to set it. So let's move on to page 16, and we'll talk about item number 5. Now, this one is actually an APAR, delay during MQ disk call in MQ version 7 client. And at the time that I put this together, the APAR is still in open status. It's a relatively new APAR. There will be a fix to correct the problem, but what I want to talk about here is when it occurs, what you might see, and a way to work around it. So the problem is that it's specific to version 7 clients, connecting to a version 7 queue manager, and the problem showed up when an MQ disk call was being issued that there'd be in excess of 20 seconds delay for that MQ disk to complete. And the signature of that was that when we looked in the trace, we saw an entry like this on the get adder info call to TCPIP that it came back with a return code 11001. And that is a TCPIP error code that means host not found. Now, you may wonder why we're trying to do a get adder info to find a host if we're doing a disconnect. Well, in version 7, there's a parameter shareconv, shared connections, that has us go through some additional code that when the client disconnects, the socket that's being used by that particular channel is closed, and we go to collect some error information in case we need to issue error messages. And one of the things that we try to collect is a host name and IP address. And it, in order to do this, it does a DNS, a reverse DNS lookup, and that usually takes about 12 seconds to fail. Well, we go through that iteration two times, and when it fails, it ends up taking in excess of 20 seconds for that reverse lookup to fail and then come back. So we were seeing the delay because of that particular call. Now, if we go to page 17, like I said, it's going to be fixed in this APAR IZ78516. But there's two different ways you can work around the problem. The first way is not to use shareconv on your client channels. If you're not intentionally using that, if you don't want to use it, you can set it to zero and avoid the problem altogether because we won't make that particular call unless we're going through a disconnect for a shareconv channel. If you do want to use that, there's another way you can avoid the delays until the APAR fix is available, and there's a parameter called DNS lookup on error that you can set in your TCP stanza of your qm.ini file, or you could it would be set in the registry on a Windows system, but it's under the TCP stanza. Now, this DNS lookup on error equal no will mean that we don't go through and try to gather that error information when we're doing the disconnect. As a result, that information wouldn't show up in any error messages that we wrote to our error logs, but basically that would be the extent of the effect of setting that parameter in your INI file. If you're not familiar with that parameter, there's an APAR that introduced it and talks about setting it, gives an example of setting it, APAR IY64349, and I give you a link there to that particular APAR if you want to go take a look at that. At this point, as we go over to page 18, I'm going to turn over the presentation to Jack White to continue with item 6 and go from there.
Hi, this is Jack. Topic 6 was a MQ version 701, Queue Manager fails to start. You would get an FTC looking similar to the one there on the screen with that ZS142006 probe ID and that same function stack. This is caused by a design change. If you go to slide 19, please. This was caused by a design change in that NQ locking functionality in MQ701. That handles some queue manager control commands like start MQM and create MQM and delete MQM, and that causes this problem. There is an APAR that has been raised to fix it. It's a hyper APAR. That means it's highly pervasive. And the Level 3 team is still working on it. As of today, they said about 2 weeks before that's fixed because it's in-depth in the code that they have to look in there. But the local fix is to do run AMQI clen with a dash XVH before trying to start the queue manager. There's also another – this problem will manifest itself in a different way only on Linux. You'll get the same FTC. It looks very similar, but there's a different APAR for that to address that problem, and that was IZ63946. I forgot to mention it on here, just so there's two problems that could look very similar. If you're running on Linux, you might have that other problem. Slide 20, please. Topic 7 is the Java or JMS application hanging when trying to connect to a queue manager. In your Java core dump, I highlighted some eye catchers in there, specifically the one closer to the bottom, the remote connection pool, get connection. Slide 21, please. Again, on that, you'll see the remote connection pool, get connection highlighted. Slide 22, there's another way you might see this. Concurrent modification exception and remote connection pool connection. Slide 23, please. So there, to work around that, again, back to the connection sharing issue Greg mentioned in his last topic, you can set that to zero, turn it off, using one of the two methods there mentioned. It's fixed in the APAR reference there, and it's included in the fixed spec 7012. Slide 24, please. Topic 8 was a file transfer addition. There are an awful lot of problems we've been seeing with that. Many of the PMRs that we get end up being APARs. There's probably been 4 or 5 open since we created this list. The first few I have listed there are in the fixed spec 7021. Go to page 25. There are iFixes available for the ones I have listed on page 25 and on page 26. Go to page 26. Page 27, this is just a list of some of the new ones that have been created in the past, I guess, 2 weeks or so. I didn't get all of them in there by the time we had to turn this in, but there are certainly a few more that have been created since. So if you are using the MQ file transfer edition, you'll definitely want to look into some of those iFixes and the latest maintenance for that. Slide 28. Topic 9, the version 7 queue manager hangs when you're trying to use the broker in version 7. The hang can occur if queue manager is trying to connect, is made with the run MQSC interface or by using the PCF facility while you're trying to publish topics. Page 29, it gives an outline of a scenario that leads up to this. So process A is published in the process or a topic, takes a lock on that topic tree. Process B, you're trying to do a display of the connection, so it's taking a lock on the HOBJ. In the meantime, that display con is trying to get a lock on the topic tree, which process A already has. Process A is trying to get a lock on HOBJ, which is held by process B, so you end up in a deadlock and the queue manager hangs. Slide 30, please. Local fix to prevent that is just don't use the display con or the display queue status type handle when you're publishing topics. There's an APAR raise to fix that. It's not available yet. Still in the works. So we don't have a link to read anything about that yet. Page 31. Topic 10. Back to conversation sharing again. Failing with a memory access violation. Try to use the conversation sharing, it fails to connect, starting a thread, and it ends with a memory access violation. The symptoms you'll see you'll get an AMQ 9233 error. 32, please. The symptoms will appear a little differently on Windows and Unix, and there are the FDCs that you'll see on Windows. Slide 33 shows what you'll see on the Unix and Linux side. The components are the same. The probe IDs are a little different for the different operating systems. Slide 34. The function stacks in the FDCs for both the Windows and Unixes will also look the same. 35. Workaround is disable the ShareConv, just like the option in topic Greg talked about and the one that I mentioned earlier. There's an APAR available. It will be available in the next fix pack, E7. Slide 36. I threw one other one in there, topic 11, just in case you didn't realize that MQ version 6 is going out of support a little over a year. So it can give you plenty of time to do plan your migration. And slide 37 has a couple links to with migration information. All those links that are on the presentation are hotspots, so we tried them out in the PDF file. They'll all work. They'll go right to whichever topic you were interested in. Slide 38. Quick summary. It's pretty simple. Just try to stay current with maintenance, and check that MQ support site, or known as the support portal, where a lot of this information we pulled came from. Tech notes and information on APARs, APAR details. Slide 39. There's some additional resources, links to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange, where you can find other webcasts that are scheduled or previously recorded webcasts. DeveloperWorks has a lot of in-depth articles written by developers, guys from the lab, that go into a lot of detail. Education Assistant has some self-help modules to get you up to speed on some of these products. The service request tools for Passport Advantage customers, where they can open up new PMRs, update their PMRs, or view PMRs online. And then you have the My Notifications, where you can sign up to get emails on current information on the products that you're interested in. Page 40. Turn it over to Joseph.
Thank you, Greg and Jack, for a great presentation. At this point in time, Jackie, we would like to open the lines for questions.
We have one question from FJ Brandelick. Your line is open.
It looks like a lot of the travel tickets that are open right now pertain to sharing conversation. Is it safe to assume that this functionality is not ripe yet?
Well, a number of those problems do already have fixes for them. You're correct in saying that we have seen a number of issues in that area, but we have addressed a number of those issues as well. But as you saw in our presentation today, there are still some outstanding issues in that area. So I won't try to sugarcoat it and say we have everything fixed now. There are still some issues there, but we have addressed a number of them already. So if you have a current maintenance level, you would pick up several of the fixes we've already incorporated into those code levels.
We have no additional questions.
Thank you, Jackie. At this time, we will conclude the presentation.